May 18, 2022. It's the Watt for B-Row Show.
Well, when you're standing up there playing like that, how do you hear the changes? Do you think of the changes as you're going along, or does the bass player suggest them to you with what he's playing? Or?
Yeah, the bass player, I count on him, you know.
What does he actually do? Like when Wilbur would be playing bass, would he play like the dominant note in each chord? I don't know how you phrase this, but can you explain it?
Well, at times, but a bass player like Wilbur Ware, he's so inventive, man. You know, like he doesn't always play the dominant notes.
But whatever he plays is a suggestive note that gives you an idea of which way the changes are going.
Yeah, it may be. Yeah. It might not be. But Wilbur, he plays the other way sometimes. He plays things that are rather kind of, you know, they're foreign. Mm-hmm. Well, if you didn't know the song, well, you wouldn't be able to find it, you know, because he's superimposing things. He's playing around, or under, or over, or something, you know, building tension. Mm-hmm. So that when he comes back to it, you know, you feel everything sucks in.
Yeah.
But usually I knew the tune, so I mean, it was all right. I knew the changes anyway, so we managed to come out to the end together anyway.
Which always helps.
Yeah, we managed to finish on time. Yeah. It's a lot of fun playing that way, though.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Because sometimes he would be playing awful changes, and I would be playing awful changes. Yeah. And he would be playing some other kind of awful changes from the type I'd be playing. And neither one of us playing the changes of the tune until we reach a certain spot, you know, and then if we get there together, we're lucky, you know, that's.
Watt for Pedro show. Happy Wednesday. We started off the show with John Coltrane talking to August Bloom about hearing chord changes in 1958. Then we heard Shore Leave on Farragonesia by the Royal Arctic Institute. And my guests are John Lau from the Royal Arctic Institute. Welcome aboard, John Lau.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Mike.
Yeah.
Long time no spiel.
So who wants to go first?
What do you want?
I want to know about your musical journey.
Okay. Lyle, you want to hit that? Okay, sure.
Okay, Lyle, please bring your earliest musical memory, please.
Of John or the whole thing? The whole musical memory.
I'm going to repeat what I just told you or asked you.
Okay.
Please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Oh man. I was sitting in the back of the car and with my parents driving and them singing along with Sinatra jams. That was a very vivid memory of mine growing up.
And the pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
Yeah, we had a piano and we had the mandatory everyone tries to play.
I don't know, that's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, of course. But it just seems to be pretty standard stuff. So we had the piano, my brother and I both tried.
Can I ask you, sorry to interrupt, but did you have the nightmare of the piano teacher thing?
No, she was, they weren't that bad. It was just, what was really happening was I was playing piano and then punk rock came along and there wasn't a lot of piano in that punk and hardcore stuff. That's why I kind of shift my journey over to the drums because even though there was definitely some great keyboard guys like, Steve Naive from Elvis Costello and the Attractions and Johnny Fingers from the Boomtown Rats, all those cats, it seemed like there was more opportunities if when I was asked to play drums in the hardcore band just to say, yes, I know how to play drums.
I want to go before that shit. What about in school? Like, were you in the choir or the marching band?
No, I wasn't any of that shit. The closest I
let me ask you, first record you bought with your own money?
Ooh, that's a really good one. It might have been something like, what it was? It was Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life. I remember my dad driving me to Corvettes to buy it, and it was $3.99 for the double album, booklet, and the single.
And what was the first gig you saw?
The first gig I saw was my brother was taking me to gigs, and I saw Fleetwood Mac on the Rumors Tour in, 78 or 79 or something like that.
And so, first, piano used to be in the rhythm section, but when did you get on drums?
Okay, so that, now, jumping a little ahead, it was, I was just hanging out at a Dead Boys gig, and my buddy Jesse Malin introduced me to the guys who became the Misguided, and they said, do you play drums? I said, no. And I was like, do you guys know how to play? And they said, no. So we decided to go and try to figure it all out together.
Well, how'd you get your first drum set?
I was using my buddy's Danny Sage, who was a old hardcore dude. He was in the Heart Attack for a while and Degeneration. He was a drummer, and I was using his kit.
Speaking of Degeneration, we just lost Brother Howie.
Got it. I know.
Very sad.
It's tough times. It's very sad.
So you were borrowing a set.
Yeah. He kind of left it in my basement. He went to learn how to play guitar, and he kind of just kind of left it there, so I just kind of kept on working on that.
And so no teacher?
Oh, no. I was too punk.
Okay. So, George Hurley, the way he learned was he got the Who, My Generation album, and Billy Cobham, Spectrum.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a George Hurley and me story?
Bring it.
I know it's a little early, but I'd like to tell you one. We played that show at the Firehose, Das Damen and Firehose, it might have been your LA debut or something at the Anti Club. And Hurley was watching me break down my drums, and he told me I was striking my hi-hat stand all wrong, and he taught me how to do it so I wouldn't bend the rod. So that's been with me ever since. Of all the things, I used to watch him all the time and rip off, try to play like him, but that was a hardcore lesson. Like, he was like, dude, you don't know how to strike your stand. This is how you do it. And I didn't, and that was great. So I always think about that.
So you did have a teacher.
I guess so, in that moment, yeah. You know, later in life I did. The only hardcore, only time when I was punking was Jack Rabbit came over once, and he also told me that I was playing the bass pedal all wrong.
Even worse? Let me enlighten the listeners the fact of Jack Rabbit has had this zine out for years, but he was also drummer man for a band called Even Worse. Yeah.
Yep. And I was playing the bass pedal flat foot, and he said, you got to use your toe. You got to squash it like a bug. And those are good life lessons. Yeah.
So it's a couple teachers.
Yeah.
Now, can you remember the first gig you ever played?
First gig I ever played, yeah. I was in a punk rock cover band with a couple of friends, including Dave Motamid, who we still play with now. And we played the library of my school. They had a little club, and we played, I was playing keyboards. I did play keyboards on that. We played Strangler's Song.
So you used your piano knowledge.
Yes, yeah, I had a Univox, and
I remember the Univoxes. They had three sounds, right? Piano, clavichord, and harpsichord or something?
Yeah, so then for $99, I responded to this ad, New Wave Organ for Sale, and I went and bought it, and it was an Ace Tone that I schlepped around to all my practice spaces, and it eventually ended up being a very big part of the Yola Tango musical sound. They just took it and they just, you know, used it because we were sharing a practice space.
So you actually did a gig. Your first gigs weren't on drums. It was on keyboards.
Yeah. Yes. Even with I was in a lineup of Heart Attack that played a CB's audition, and I played keyboards on that.
You didn't really give up keyboards as a kid. You just, you stopped taking the lessons.
Yeah. I gave up the ghost. Yeah, because everyone was like, you know, we're into the Damned, and the Damned had keyboards, but the Ramones and all the bands, you know, and there's more opportunities to try to.
Well, one of my trios is the Second Men, and they're just organ, drums, bass, sort of like a Emerson, like a Paul. Oh, what was that Canadian band? Triumvirate.
I think it was, Yeah, we just played with this really good band called Clam, and it's this keyboards, bass, and drums, and they're totally in that genre as well. I was like, leave those guitar players behind. Sorry, John, but it's not.
Well, you know, rock and roll, I got to tell you, rock and roll is actually piano music. Even Chuck Berry, his piano man was writing the songs. But they're kind of, now we got Casios and stuff, but they used to be hard to move around. Like you were talking about schlepping that organ.
Yeah. New wave organ. Yeah, I know. Now it's easy peasy. You got all those sounds. You can program them and just knock them out.
But. And then the whole idea of you got a button for each note.
Yeah, because Royal Arctic, we have a keyboard guy. And he gets all the sounds he wants in the world out of just one little keyboard. It's insane. You know, I can't even comprehend how he does it all. But that's what he does. You know, he wants the Mellotron, he hits the button, he's got it. You know, he gets all the good sounds.
Talk about heavy schlep, a Mellotron. Because they had eight fucking tape recorders.
Yes.
Right.
Not anymore.
What's that, Strawberry Fields?
Yeah.
Something like that. You say that first gig in the library, you were doing copies of Stranglers. Was that gig a success?
Not necessarily. You know, we kept on, I'm very good at just keeping the blinders on no matter what music or whatever band I'm in. So we kept on doing them. You know, we did a few gigs as covers and stuff like that. And it wasn't until I hooked up with Jesse, Heart Attack, and D-Gen, that I even comprehended doing originals. You know, I didn't think that was a thing that...
Can you remember the first song you wrote?
Oh, I didn't write any of them.
No, but did you ever write a song yourself?
Not really. No, okay. Don and I wrote some lyrics. I definitely wrote some lyrics for Das Dahmen, but not music.
Okay, I'm gonna play some Das Dahmen. Trick question. That was a trick question.
Thank you. Leben ist schön, die Luft ist rein, und so soll es immer sein. La 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 la, wenn ich über die Straße gehe und die vielen Häuser sehe, denk ich mir, das Leben ist schön. So soll es ewig weitergehen. La la la, das Leben ist schön, die Luft ist rein, und so soll es immer sein. Das Leben ist schön, die Luft ist rein, und so soll es immer und ewig sein. Oh, ich bin so glücklich. Oh, ich bin so glücklich. La 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 li. La li 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 li. War in einem Automobil. Nicht, aber nicht, wird mir zu viel. Das Leben ist schön, die Luft ist rein, und so, so soll es immer sein. Ah, 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 ich bin so glücklich. Da da di 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 di
fixated, watching the palms of my
I'm Thank you.
Watch for Pivo Show. Heard Das Damen starting off that chunk of music with Trick Question. Then XV with We Begin Again. Alexander von Borsig after that with Das Leben ist Schön. Can't Burn Digital Books. It's a demo from MB Jones. Model Home, Live in the Yard. Atmosphere with Melting a Piece of Cadmium. Noisuka, Somber Assessment. Carnation Lily, Lily Rose from Mike Bamford for String and Tins. And finally, $2 Guitar, the Well Song, which is good for you, John. Your band with Steve Shelley, right? Okay, please bring your earliest musical memory.
Earliest musical memory was my dad playing Sergeant Pepper and me running in circles around the coffee table whenever he would play it.
So he was a musician, or was he playing?
Yeah, I'm actually third generation, yeah. My grandfather and my great uncles had a jazz band during World War II. And then, you know, growing up, my dad grew up in the 50s and 60s, and he was a hell of a drummer. And, you know, played in all of these really great 60s pop bands down on the Gulf Coast. And so, yeah, that's how I got started.
Okay, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Machine Gun Etiquette by the Damned.
And what was the first gig you saw?
First gig I saw was Alabama.
Okay.
The group Alabama at the Shrimp Festival in Gulf Shores, Alabama.
And in grade school, were you in the fucking marching band or choir shit like that?
No, but I started playing guitar when I was 8. And so while all the other kids were out doing all that stuff, I was at home practicing my butt off. Yeah.
Practicing. Did you have a teacher?
I had a bunch of different teachers over the years, yeah. When I first started, my parents got me this teacher at the local music store. And God bless him, you know, he was trying to teach me the quote-unquote right way with the Mel Bay book. And, you know, I wanted to be Brian Setzer, and he was trying to teach me how to play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And I got discouraged, and then I finally got this really great teacher when I was about 9 who realized that if she was going to keep me interested, then she had to be able to teach me how to play along to records. And so she taught me all the basic chords and would write out these very simple chord charts for stuff that I was seeing on MTV.
MTV.
It was great.
So you guys are kind of young, huh? What about the first gig?
First gig, I was 13 years old, and I played at an all-ages club in my band at the time, where, kind of like Lyle, we were a punk rock cover band. We were playing songs.
That's so trippy. I remember, that's really trippy for me, because punk bands were all about writing your own songs. But I remember a Minutemen tour, early Minutemen tour, one of those kind of bands opened up for us in Oklahoma City, and I was like, whoa. Because, no, it's just my personal experience. Before that, everybody copied songs. But then when I heard a punk band do that, I mean, a whole set of them, and they were like Sex Pistols, Damned, Clash, you know.
Right.
And like a top 40, but a, you know, punk. And it just tripped me out because... when I look back on the old days, too, I really think that the movement was a reaction to arena rock. Because we didn't really know about club music. And if there was club music, it was people doing top 40, right? Copying the popular songs. Now, was this gig for you, John, a success?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The other kids loved it. You know, we were playing stuff that we heard on our college radio station. We were doing a lot of Gun Club songs and the Cramps, a bunch of Dead Kennedy stuff like that. And, I grew up in Mobile, Alabama, where there wasn't a whole lot going on. So anything like that, the kids ate up. you know.
What's that band? XBX? XRBX? EB. It was three brothers. They were from Mobile.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And I got a buddy there named Todd. He's been doing music for a while there. And, you know, Sly Stone said something. It's not where you're from, it's where you're at.
Yes.
Now, were you like Lyle? Did you never write songs? You must have wrote songs. Can you remember the first song you wrote?
I mean, I started writing songs, I don't know, I guess I was about 15.
Yeah.
I don't remember the first one. I was in bands with guys who were a lot older than me, and I would contribute, but they were the main songwriters in that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
And XBXR. He changed his name. One of the brothers. He's called Vice Cooler now.
Oh my God! I've never heard of that.
But his name was Chris before. Touched it. Yeah.
Okay.
My memory is terrible. Anyway, I'm just thinking of Mobile and Dauphin Street, right? That's the big street there.
That's the big street. Yeah. I played a lot of gigs on Dauphin Street.
And people don't realize it's kind of a miniature New Orleans in a way. Very, very, yeah. Very miniature.
It's the birthplace. It's the actual birthplace of Mardi Gras.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. And French and Spanish and
yeah,
a lot of traditions go in there. Only Catholic places of the South and stuff.
Yeah, I mean it's unlike anywhere else in Alabama.
One time I sat in a church, this grass in front of this old church, and while a lightning storm was going on, man, it was like tearing cloth, ripping and chain lightning, you know, behind the clouds and shit like that. It was pretty amazing. In fact, my last time I played there was the day we lost Jack Bruce, and it tore me up, man. I found out right before the gig, and I played terrible, and then after I drank a bunch of bourbon and watched the YouTube.com videos of him, you know, and just crying, I owed that man so much.
Wow.
So, tell me about a little about $2 guitar.
That's a question for Lyle.
Okay, so $2 guitar. Our 2 degrees of $2 guitar is the bassist Dave Botavid, who was the bassist of Royal Arctic, and he was a bass player in The Misguided, and he was at my bar mitzvah, and he was in Das Damen. So he was also in $2 guitar.
Oh, and, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
So that was our. So we threw in a couple of songs from, like, where everyone in our band, all the bands that we've all played in, and Dave was, you know, very...
Okay, so what we did was we took some of the Arctic, these first couple of tunes. You know, I just got a bunch of tunes from you guys, so I didn't know who was on what. Well, I knew, Lyle, you were in Das Dama. I knew that for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, John, I didn't mean to fuck up like that.
That's all right. So what else do we got in there? We got Misguided. That's me. That's my hardcore band. I'm on the drums there. John, what did you put from you in there?
Yeah, next hour we'll play some Misguided. We'll play some Headbrain. We'll play some Wardrobe, the Summer Wardrobe, and we'll play some Reunion. But we're at the end of the first hour now.
Yeah.
Okay, people, May 18th, 2022, just watch the Peter Show. Hold tight with Lyle and John from the Royal Arctic Institute. Hold tight for hour two. May 18, 2022, it's the second hour of the Waffle Pedro Show.
watch waterfalls and pity roar. You feel to mourn, but I'm like before. You discover that you'd just be one more person crying. So don't fear if you hear a foreign sound in your ear. It's all right, Mom. I'm only sighing. The call to make all that should be killed to crawl, while others say don't hate nothing at all except hatred. Disillusioned words like bullets bark as human gods aim for their mark. Make everything from toy guns that spark to flesh-colored Christs that glow in the dark. It's easy to see without looking too far that not much is really sacred. I've got nothing, Mom. cultivate their flowers just to be nothing more than something they invest in. Are some on principles baptized to strict body platform ties, social clubs in drag disguise, outside as they can freely criticize, tell nothing except who to idolize and say God bless him. One who sings with his tongue on fire, gargles in the rat race choir, bent out of shape by the tightest pliers, cares not to come up any higher, but rather get you down in the hole that he's in. It's all right, Mom.
Watt for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with Headbrain doing The Day the Earth Turned to Stone. Simon Grab after that, brand new Coma, and it's the Bit Turner remix. Seedsman to the Word World, not word. What? That's Blood. Kundalini from Valentina Gontarova, the re-release, right? The Ukrainian musician, me from late 80s. Re-released it. Sam Locke Ward, Bob Bunko Jr. with Sports Bar, and finally Reunion with Hulls. So who's connect is Reunion? Lyle? John?
Yeah. I don't know. The band or the track?
Yeah, the band. The band. The track is Hulls.
Wait, repeat that last part?
Reunion is the name of the band. Hulls is the name of the song.
Man, that ain't us.
Okay, well, there's another fuck up. It was in the batch of songs that I got from Howard. Okay, who's connect is Headbrain?
All right, there you go. John, you got that one. Headbrain is the experimental trio of our keyboardist, Carl Bagley.
Okay.
Everything on that record is completely improvised.
We had a band like that here called Paper Bag, right?
Yeah.
And they never did the same song twice.
Nope.
They were always making it out and stuff. And look, let's get caught up to date. The Royal Arctic Institute. How did that come about?
Okay. Well, I had lived in Austin, Texas, for about 15 years, and moved to New York. Not for any musical reasons. I had kind of thought that my music career was over, and I came up to New York to go to grad school. And I was just working on that, and then by accident, I met our first bass player in the institute. And we just got together to play a little bit, and it clicked, and he introduced me to Lyle, and the three of us played for a while, and it felt good, and I thought, well, I guess this isn't over for me. So that's kind of how it got started. Yeah.
And when we first jammed, you know, you might know the first bass player guy was Jerry Smith. He was in this band Phantom Tollbooth. So
yeah.
He was another, you know. Yeah, so he was a great bass player. And so we were doing we were just jamming, and pretty early on, I was like, let's, no vocals, let's just do this, like, kind of, you know, Tom Verlaine, Bill Frisell, you know, kind of instrumental thing, and just keep on working on that.
But I don't understand. He's a bass player, you're a drummer, and why you mention these three guitars?
Because that was what John was presenting.
Oh, yeah, but you guys were playing first, and then John stumbles into it, right? No?
No. It was Jerry and John, and I stumbled in.
Okay.
They were already hooked up a little bit. But I was kind of like, if we're going to really be a band, let's do a, you know, let's try to, because we were like, oh, we should get a singer. And I'm like, nah, singers are boring. Let's just get a, let's do a, let's have the music do the talking, and let's just play.
Okay, who's the connected to the Summer Wardrobe?
That's me.
Okay, John.
I was the pedal steel guy in the Summer Wardrobe.
I want to play some right now, okay?
Let me know what I'm doing to you. what you're planning. Let me know what I'm doing in my life.
amazing uses for light. Most familiar is the visible light, the kind of light we see and see by.
Peter Show. Started that chunk of music off with the Summer Wardrobe doing One More Try. Then Nels Klein and Elliot Sharp. There's some guitar players. Blue Particles. And also, Nels Klein now in New York. 10 years now, I think. Northern Jaw with We Are the Light Eaters. Mid-X with Skinheads on a Raft. Ray Shin with Don't Panic. And Misguided with State of War.
Yes.
There's some hardcore. Some wicked hardcore.
OG.
So, John, tell me about your pedal steel. Man, those are intense to play. Well, was it a 10-stringer?
I have a universal 12, which takes the two 10-string necks and combines them. So, I started playing pedal steel, I guess, 20-some-odd years ago, because I was living in Texas, and, you know, in a place like Austin, you can't throw a rock without hitting a really good guitarist. And so I started playing pedal steel, and so it went from there. Like, I ended up doing a lot of session work. I played in a ton of backing bands. I played in a lot of touring bands. But the Summer Wardrobe was my own thing. And then we went on to be Rocky Erickson's backing band.
Ah, we're going to play some Rocky next hour.
Yeah.
You and I actually hung out one night in San Francisco at the Great American Music Hall when I played there with Rocky.
Ah.
You were at the show and we hung out afterwards.
That's right, because a huge fan and a beautiful man. I got to say hi to him at in Chicago at Lollapalooza. And he walked right off the stage, and I was at the bottom of the stairs. And much respect to you, Mr. Erickson. And he says, "Great to see you again." he's a beautiful man. But I still do a bunch of his songs. Still, my interpretations. Just incredible, his voice and his imagery, and just a big teacher to me.
Out of all of the stuff of his that you do, what's kind of your favorite?
Sweet Honey Pie. Put a bass solo in.
Oh, wow.
Look, we're at the end of the second hour. May 18, 2022, edition Watt Pedro Show. Special guest is John Lyle. Hold tight for hour three. May 18, 2022. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Yeah.
6 inches above the firmament. We're grounded on the words we really shook out to a capitalist phenomenon.
But it was produced by Stu Cook, the bass player from Creedence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's got a picture of, like, his head ripping open with the dog coming out. I should tell people, start third hour off with Rocky Erickson with Evil Hook Wildlife E.T. doing Cold Night for Alligators. Live. Where was that?
That was at the Castle Clinton National Monument at the southernmost tip of Manhattan Island.
Wow.
It was an awesome show. Wow. Oh, my God.
Then we had Crane with It's Come to This, Vex Party, News Briefs, Robert Pollard. Bob Pollard's got a new album. I mean, every 3 months, this guy.
Can't stop himself.
Yeah. Come here, beautiful. And then Side A from Half a Dove in New York, Half a Dove in Buenos Aires, Pauline Oliveros and Reynolds. And then the Royal Arctic Institute, Fishing by Lantern. Who came up with that name?
Me, John.
Okay, John. Enlighten us.
That's a thing down on the Gulf Coast. It's referred to as mullet gigging. And so you go out at night with these big lanterns, and you kind of go into.
No, I didn't mean the title of the song. I'm talking about the name of the fucking band. I know what lantern fishing is.
The name of the band isn't anywhere near as interesting as mullet gigging. But the name of the band came from a Philip Pullman novel, The Golden Compass.
Okay.
Have you ever read those?
No.
Philip Pullman's this great English author that did this trilogy of books called His Dark Materials. And I guess they came out, God, about 20 years ago now, and they caused a real fuss at the time because they were children's or like young adult books. But
I think that's
really
so retarded. Make it a genre that's just what you have old man books. I mean, what the fuck is that about? Because I see this a problem in music. It seems like Berlin Walls and Dachau's and Gulags. This shit of like dividing things into like marketable chunks.
Mm.
Yeah, it's just my little little things. But anyway, he caused a fuss by doing what?
Well, I mean, they were young adult books, but they were, you know, really him raging against the Catholic Church. That was they were young adult books, but they weren't. You know, it was really sort of his underhanded way of taking a big old jab at the Vatican, and people got real up in arms about them. But they're brilliant books. And so, yeah, there was this committee in the first book called the Royal Arctic Institute, where they did these Arctic expeditions in a sort of alternate Earth.
Whoa. Well, you know, they thought that North Pole, there was a hole there. You could get to the other side. Explorations of Dutch guys and Norwegian guys. Yeah, they thought there was a shortcut, believe it or not. I want to play some more Royal Arctic Institute here, the first of the eight. Watt for Pedro Show last music for this edition. First of the eight from the Royal Arctic Institute. And then the Mountain Offensive, Brother Phil, the WFORNR version. Maybe rock and roll, huh? Everything's going to be all right eventually. With some funny spelling. He couldn't get into the gig. We were playing in Sacktown a couple weeks ago. I was helping Mike Baghetta, Stephen Hodges, and he wouldn't didn't have a vaccination card. 48 towns in 48 days, 12,580 miles. I drove them all. I wore a mask even in the boat with the guys, you know. It's kind of scary. Not just getting sick yourself, but being a fucking carrier, you know. And then finally, the Royal Arctic Institute with Ghosts of the Great Library. So you bookman, John?
Oh, yeah, man. I'm a total bibliophile.
Yeah, great, great. Because I get a lot of my inspiration from books, too. It's also harder to rip off the licks. You have to use a couple layers of abstraction there and stuff. But I've let books inform a lot of my works. Like my first opera, I used Jimmy Joyce and, what's his name? Richard McKenna, The Sand Pebbles. I'll tell you a book. Yeah, it's the only book he wrote because he died kind of young. He's a machinist mate in the Navy, like my pop, but maybe 30, 40 years before him. So he's in China on the Yangtze River. It was me and D. Boone's favorite movie when we were boys, Steve McQueen, 1966. But I didn't even know there was a book. And, man, I love Steve McQueen in a sailor suit, but Hollywood, they changed the ending. Motherfucker.
Of course.
Yeah, what do you think of that? Hey, tell me, how is a Royal Arctic Institute song put together?
Well, historically, up until about the past year or two, I would kind of come up with the main theme and bring it in, and we would kind of pick it apart, and everybody would write their own parts, and it would end up sounding nothing like what I originally brought in. But over the past, like I said, about a year or two, other band members have started bringing in stuff that they've written, and it has really become this beautiful collaboration. And, you know, any piece of music that's brought in, the thing that excites me the most about it is that once we're all done with it, it sounds nothing like the original piece. And that's really exciting for me.
Which is saying there's kind of an evolutionary process.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we are very much a band in that sense. Everybody brings something beautiful to the table.
What about gigs?
What about them? Yeah.
Tell me about the first one.
First one was at an African gallery.
Yeah, put by Tim Folion from $2 Guitar. There you go.
He was on the show.
Yeah, so he was booking an African art gallery in Hoboken for a while. And he was having a hard time coming up with bands, and we just started jamming, and he asked us if we wanted to play, and we didn't have a name, and barely had a set, and but he made it so chill that we're like, what do we got to lose, which is basically our whole motto. So, yeah, we played Hoboken, this amazing art gallery for free, and we played there a bunch. We kind of use it as a home base a lot of times since then.
Oh, wow.
That was the first gig, and we've been knocking around. You know, we do mainly weekend rock. We did a bunch of shows this February. We were playing two or three dates in a row all the weekends. Cause, you know, dudes have jobs and stuff, so we can't go out like.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you about tour.
Yeah, we can't do it like we used to, but we hit it pretty hard this winter. We did a bunch of shows, and.
Being a Northeast band, gigs are kind of close.
Yeah, you can really hit D.C. and Philly, and, you know, if you're going
You're talking an I-95 tour.
Yeah, the I-95 tour. Yep, we hit it hard.
You can get Boston, you can get Providence, you can get, New Haven, you can get Portland, Maine.
We were...
Baltimore.
Either we rocked them all, or we tried to, you know.
Right.
We're not really, you know...
venues aren't dying to have us play, so it's, sometimes it gets a little tough getting shows, but I've always, except for those years, pretty much SST and Bob Lawton booking, I've always booked the shows, so, gig we must.
Where can people find you guys on the internet?
The criminal places like Spotify.
You mean there's no Royal Arctic Institute website?
Bandcamp.
We don't have a straight up website.
I like Bandcamp.com, but I look at those other things. It's like telephone poles to staple flyers on. So that's why you can get a WordPress site for free. Maybe you guys should do that. Just some stupid suggest from Watt. What's your next plans?
We're gonna try to we recorded the last EP with James McNew from Yola. And we're going to hopefully record a few more songs and hopefully eventually press it up into an album. We're just going to keep it on.
It's been really John Fogerty wrote me a message. I didn't get to meet. He didn't give it to me personally. He gave it to somebody, a kid that was working at his video, old man down the road. But it said, keep on, keep it on. And I always use that.
Oh, I know.
It was after D. Boone got killed, and it's kind of my motto because, man, it's really easy to get sad. But I love what you're doing. And, other people playing, it inspires me to keep playing, too. So I'm so glad that you guys are doing it. And you didn't give up on music, John. That's great. And you moved to New York with Lyle there. And it's beautiful. Thank you so much for being on the show. Whenever you guys want to come back on, let me know, okay?
Thank you, Mike. It's been awesome.
Okay.
Great to connect.
Absolutely. People, it's been the May 18th, 2022 edition of Wild Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.